serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, hearing from ex-prisoners of war today as we mark National POW MIA Recognition Day. Ceremonies are taking place all over the country this weekend, and even a few next weekend. If you're anywhere near Bakersfield, California, where listeners have been catching Hometown Heroes on affiliate KNZR for years, I'd love to see you at VFW Post 97 as we honor and remember our POWs, as well as those still missing in action. I've been asked to go speak there, but the real reason to go is to shake the hands of at least four ex-prisoners of war. If you'd like more information, call this number, 661-496-4672. I have that number online for you also at hometownheroesradio.com. Again, it's 661-496-4672. You just heard from one of the POWs you can meet there on Saturday, Jack Schwartz. He's 102. Robert Farwell is only 98. He's going to be there as well. And it was 73 years ago this week, in September of 1944, that he was shot down on only his fifth mission as a B-17 pilot with the 306th Bomb Group.
The mission was an industrial complex that was about 80 miles southwest of Berlin. So we had to fly out over the North Sea, come in over eastern Germany, and fly down. We probably flew about 40 to 50 miles west of Berlin. And just as we were past Berlin, probably about 60 miles from the target. Of course, we were flying in flak all the time. And then about that time, our fighter escort left. And as soon as they left, we got jumped by a bunch of F-190s. And I think that's what ended up hitting our airplane.
And had you faced opposing fighters before, or was that the first time?
No, actually, that's the first time. Because in the other missions, we had fighter escort, and a lot of them were over a part of Germany that we were occupied. And by this time, the Germans were a little bit short of fighter pilots. So they didn't tangle with anything. They just stayed back, and they would then only hit the bombers after our fighter escorts left.
So how did that unfold for you? You're up there in the left seat in the cockpit flying this plane, and did someone see something? Did you see the fighters coming? How did you realize you were under attack?
Oh, yeah, we saw them coming. We were flying, in formation. I was leading the upper sixth element of the group. Gee, there were several groups. I'm not sure just how many airplanes in all that were going on that mission. Quite a bunch. We were in the lead group. We just ended up getting the head-on attack from the fighters. You know, it's just the way it was.
So you're looking out the front of the cockpit, and you see an FW-190 flying straight at you.
Four of them. Yeah, we can see them coming. There's nothing you can do about it. We've got a turret gunner, and the bombardier handles the lower turret. And, of course, we're shooting at them while they're shooting at us. And, it's just the way it goes.
When you see those four planes coming at you, do you even have time to think? Do you have that moment where your heart sinks down into your stomach? I mean, what was that like?
No, you just plunge ahead. You can see them coming, but there's nothing you can do about it, except you've got guys on your side that are shooting at them, and you're so busy, you don't worry about anything else.
So what happened to your airplane? How much damage did they inflict?
Well, we got hit right in the cockpit, started a fire. So obviously what the shots did was go right into the cockpit area, and it broke propellers on a B-17 are operated with oil pressure. And then, of course, you've got oxygen lines all over. So what happened when it hit in front of the cockpit, it started a fire because it broke the oil lines and severed the oxygen lines. You know, the whole cockpit was on fire. So I motioned to the co-pilot. In the meantime, the bombardier and the navigator came out from below. I motioned for the co-pilot, to get out. We pulled the hatch in there because my number three engine was hit too. So it was burning. So everybody bailed out. The co-pilot was first, then the bombardier and the navigator, then my engineer who was manning the top turret. And when they were all gone, then I went out. In the meantime, the gunners in back, the tail gunner and the two side gunners bailed out too.
You talk about the cockpit being on fire, and you're describing it very calmly and matter-of-factly, but it sounds like absolute chaos. Could you see anything in there?
Well, after a while, a lot of the smoke cleared. By the time I went to bail out, I think basically the fire was probably substantially depressed, because by the time the oil and the oxygen got together and that was burned off, there wasn't much else going on. The biggest problem then is the fire on the number three engine. Anyway, it was time to get out of the airplane.
And as you did exit that airplane, knowing the rest of your crew has already jumped off and you're bailing out, what did you see? What was the scene in front of you? Because you talked about how many planes were in this formation. What did you see as you bailed out?
Well, I knew that there was a lot of flak. There was a lot of any airplanes. There was a lot of metal flying around. So I said, I knew that we'd been briefed that the cloud formation, the tops were at about 18,000, and the bottom of the formation was at about 4,000. So I said, I'm going to wait until I can see the ground before I open my chute, because otherwise you've got falling airplanes, you've got flak all over the place. So when I got down to the point where I was just ready to come out of the clouds at about 4,000 feet, then I pulled the ripcord and the parachute took me down.
All right, I always try to imagine myself in the situation that the veteran is experiencing here, and this has got to be right up there with some of the scariest. In my mind, you're free-falling blindly through clouds for 14,000 feet.
From 28,000 to 4,000 feet, whatever that is.
24,000 feet, free falling without seeing anything, really.
No, I was in the clouds.
What in the world is going through your head?
I was waiting to see the ground.
Were you scared at all?
Not really. You don't have time to get scared. You're just figuring what do you have to do? What do you do? What are you going to do? Where's the ground? And that's about it.
So you pull your chute. And then I imagine everything slows down a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. By the time the chute opens and everything's calmed down, you're probably at about 2,000 or 3,000 feet. And fortunately, I'm about 40 miles just east of Berlin, and it's just farm country. And I'm floating down there looking at a hayfield, level and flat. When I'm at about 1,500 feet, I see a farmer with a pitchfork running towards where I'm going to be landing. And as I landed, he's there right with me. So there was no evasion, no escape, no nothing. So as the saying goes, for you, the war is over.
Did he actually say that to you?
They did. A couple of guys did.
I don't know if I've met a POW yet, at least in Europe, who wasn't told those specific words. And I imagine because you were the last one out of the plane and the plane's still moving, you're quite a ways from any of those other guys from your crew.
Yeah, I couldn't. There was nobody else near me that I could see. And, of course, we're not the only airplane. There was 12 Air B-17s shot down that day on that mission. I'm not sure how many airplanes there were on the mission, but, a couple hundred anyway. And 12 got shot down.
You weren't injured in any way? Weren't hit? Weren't burned? Nothing?
I had a helmet on and glasses, so my eyebrows were burned, and I had just flesh wounds, just kind of like sunburn on the part of my face that wasn't covered by an oxygen mask. Nothing serious.
I know it's a long time ago, and so much has happened since then, but if you can put yourself back in that position, and now you're a prisoner of the Germans, what do you think your expectation was for what the future held for you?
Well, I knew that it would, if I survived to get to one of the prison camps, that you know, we'd survive all right because the Germans were treating the prisoners pretty much according to as close to the Geneva Convention as they could, because there was a lot of German prisoners, airmen in prison camps in the UK and in the US. So they wanted to do the best they could to protect the integrity of their own prisoners, making sure that they got treated well, too.
You were a pretty big, strong guy. I've seen these photos of this bomber pilot. How much did you weigh when you were captured?
Oh, I probably weighed about 185.
And how hard was it to get used to the food? Everyone tells me about the sawdust bread. Did you chip a few teeth on that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got that piece of bread every day.
How hard was it? I've heard differing stories of how much was flour and how much was tree flour in the sawdust.
Yeah, I think it was probably about a quarter to a third sawdust. But, you know, we were so short of food, we ate it anyway. But if we had to depend on that, and an occasional potato, we'd have all starved to death.
And what was it that kept you thinking positive, believing that you're going to come out of it? Where do you think that spirit, that mindset came from for you?
Well, we were confident, absolutely, that we were overcoming them, that the Germans were on the run. And I guess part of it was because of this you know, radio we had and the little newspaper that got circulated, so that we were pretty well aware of how the war was going. So we were confident that we were going to get out of there, you know, before long.
And I saw in your scrapbook a postcard that you sent to your wife. Did you ever get any mail from her? Did you have any idea whether she knew you were alive or dead or safe or anything?
The only letter I got there was from her sister. So she told me that they had received a letter that I was shot down, and then a few weeks later that I was a POW and got an address that way she could write to, and I got that letter from her sister. In the meantime, my wife wrote a letter to me, I guess every day. Never got one. But when the war was over with, they were all sent back. And I don't know, God, there must have been 50 of them. And I read a lot of them when I was back home.
When that liberation came, what was that like for you? I'm sure you had dreamt about that moment for a while.
Oh, yeah, it was an exciting time. We ended up at Camp Lucky Strike. We were there, we were probably there about a week. And then we ended up on a ship that left Le Havre and landed in New York. We ended up getting on a train and going across the country, dropping people off on the way. And I ended up then in Sacramento and met my wife at a hotel there.
What was it like to actually see her face again?
It was great, yeah.
You haven't struck me as an overly sentimental guy or one that gets too emotional about things, but I've had a lot of other POWs tell me that when they sailed into New York Harbor, that there was something else they saw that had a particular significance to them. Did you see the Statue of Liberty? Did it mean anything to you?
Oh, yeah. We went right past it, you know. No, that was thrilling to see that. You could almost spit at it. We were, at least that's the way you felt. No, that was a great sight. It was a good moment.
And a symbolic moment. The liberty and the freedom we enjoy in this country are of such great value that millions and millions of Americans have been willing to risk their lives in order to preserve it. Whether this is the first time you've heard about National POW MIA Recognition Day or you've been tuned into that for a long time, mark it on your calendar for next year, the third weekend in September. You can access the complete original interviews with the three ex-prisoners of war we heard from today at hometownheroesradio.com. And maybe you'll get to meet a couple of them next week if you join us in Bakersfield, California. After everything we heard today, I'm pretty sure I don't need to remind you, but I will anyway, as I thank you for listening today. Let's wrap up the show as we do every week with these four words. Freedom is not free.